very good morning to you. How are you? It's Wednesday morning and it's May Day. Yeah, it's the 1st of May 2024 and it coincides with a bit of a rise in temperature, at least locally, at least here in the northwest of the UK. That's a welcome, welcome break from the old cold weather we've been dealing with up until this point. But I think I've said that already. It's good to be alive this morning. As I said, I hope I find you well. I'm in Salford at BBG Towers, the Papers podcast, where I look at the front pages of the dailies in the UK and then looking inside at some of the more interesting stories, at least as far as I'm concerned. The things that caught my eye as I was browsing the papers this morning. Before we get to the front pages, though, as I record this, it's 6:40 a.m. New York City police have raided, have stormed Columbia University to remove and to arrest dozens of pro-Palestinian protesters. Columbia University, of course, a renowned university in New York City. Handcuffed protesters were filmed shouting, "Shame on you," at the police as they were led out of the uni and taken away in buses about 24 hours after they took over an academic building. So Columbia is one of a number of universities in the US that the BBC says has been gripped by protests because students want the universities to boycott companies and individuals who have ties to Israel because of the genocide in Gaza. Okay, we'll come back to that in a few minutes because it's made some of the morning newspapers, those protests in Colombia. Shame on you, students screaming at police as the occupation of that building was ended by riot police. Yeah, okay, let's go to the front pages then. The Guardian, 22 minutes of horror, boy killed in sword rampage. Yesterday morning, as I was going about the business of preparing the Richie Allen show, the broadcasters, radio and TV, broke off from everything they were reporting on to give us a running commentary of an incident that took place in Hainault in northeast London. Terrible thing, really. A guy went on the rampage with a samurai sword and was eventually tased and arrested by police. He remains in custody, obviously. And during this incident, a 14-year-old boy was killed. It's a terrible thing. I imagine it was horrifying for anybody who was caught up in it. There are a number of videos of the guy online circulating where he was confronted by police and tased and taken into custody. The Guardian reporting police search for answers after four people were hurt in the attack, including two police officers. So that's the front page of The Guardian. You won't be surprised, it makes the front pages of most of the papers. Sword attack horror is the Daily Mirror headline, the Mirror take on it. The Daily Express, boy 14 killed in horror sword attack. Some of the conservative newspapers are having a go at Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, because he had suggested in an interview a couple of weeks ago that he was on top of the machete issue. Because machetes have been used in a number of attacks in London in recent months and in recent years, as well as zombie knives, which are horrible looking things, huge bladed weapons. Khan said, "I'm on top of it, don't worry about it." The weapon used yesterday is a samurai, or was a samurai sword. But yeah, boy 14 killed in horror sword attack, says The Express, and Khan is getting stick for it. Not sure, I mean, if you listen to me, if you know anything about me, you'll know I detest Sadiq Khan as much as I detest any politician. I'm not sure he can be blamed for what happened yesterday. People are very creative, aren't they, when it comes to acquiring things on the internet. And it seems these days you can buy pretty much bloody well anything you like online. Anyway, I'm not giving Sadiq Khan a pass, but it's ridiculous to blame him, I think. The Metro, courage of sword cops. The Metro is claiming that the officers who detained this man are very brave. This always makes me laugh. They're trained to deal with such incidents. They are trained. They should be trained. They should be properly trained in how to deal with somebody running around waving a sword or a gun or anything else. Courage, says the Metro, piss off. They were doing their job. The Eye paper. Boy 14 killed on his way to school in horror attack. Now, as I speak with you, or I'm not speaking, I'm recording this. This is a podcast, obviously. The boy hasn't been named, I don't think. Forgive me if I've missed that. But they haven't named him. Not that it really matters. Of course it matters to his family. I'm not saying he's not significant. Of course he is. But to those of us who didn't know the boy, it won't really matter. So the Eye is also calling for laws to be tightened up on machetes and zombie knives. Daily Mail. Prostate scans that could cut deaths by 40%. So it does have a photograph of the sword attacker, but the Mail is leading with prostate cancer. And it says a prostate cancer revolution is around the corner because there is a scan which could prevent 4 in 10 deaths from the disease. So a new scan will bring about a revolution in prostate cancer detection and then treatment. So yeah, so that's the Daily Mail. Prostate cancer is a big killer when it comes to men, isn't it? The Times. Immigration levels fall amid visas crackdown is the headline on the front page of the Times. So the top story there is on how immigration levels are beginning to fall because of a decline in students and foreign workers coming to the UK. So there has been a fall in students applying to come and study here and foreign workers coming to the UK. This is bringing about a drop in the numbers of immigrants coming. The Times also has a photograph of Charles, not my king, as he has returned to public engagements, interestingly enough, with a visit to a cancer hospital. The Financial Times has a story about HSBC and how its boss will be stepping down. The Daily Star, Make Britain Great Again, is the headline. What's it about? It's about Count Binface. Oh, I'm not getting into that nonsense. On the front page of the Daily Star, you're listening to the papers for May Day, the 1st of May, 2024, Wednesday. And I am, of course, Richie Allen. Now, let's have a look inside the papers then. And there are some interesting things to talk about. So let's stay with Colombia. Let's stay with the breaking news story this morning that students were dragged out of a building they had been occupying at Columbia University in Upper Manhattan. Pro-Palestinian protesters protesting their university's association with individuals who and companies who are connected to the Israeli state. They are against the genocide in Gaza. They'd occupied a building yesterday. They were dragged out. Here's one for you in the Telegraph. Biden accuses protesters of hate speech. Joe Biden has accused Gaza protesters at Columbia University of hate speech after they occupied a campus building and flew pro-Palestine banners from its windows. The Guardian describes his comments as the strongest yet on the student protests. The US president warned against tragic and dangerous hate speech. Oh, it's all gone very Orwellian, hasn't it? In our world. Tragic and dangerous hate speech. Your opinion, your declaration of your support for the people of Gaza, your opposition to the genocidal Israeli government. Well, we will call it dangerous hate speech, something which must be dealt with. Joe Biden. The Telegraph goes on to say the protests at Columbia, raging for almost 2 weeks, have spread across the US to more than 24 states and have sparked copycat encampments in Britain, France and Canada. Biden says the Telegraph is under pressure from Democrat voters, including many young liberals, who've threatened to withhold their votes in the presidential election in November because of Biden's support for Israel. He's being threatened by young Democrats. We won't vote for you. We won't vote at all if you continue to give your support and money and weaponry to the Israeli state. So Democrats in several states have organized campaigns to vote against Biden in the presidential primary in protest against his position on Gaza. A White House spokesman said yesterday that Biden had, quote, stood against repugnant anti-Semitic smears and violent rhetoric his entire life. Yeah. So there you are. It's all kicking off in various universities across the United States of America. Riot police getting involved. You've had some governors calling for the National Guard to come out and deal with these students who are standing up against the slaughter in Gaza. And now you have Biden saying something needs to be done about people and hate speech. Yes, let's move to The Guardian. Now, this is a very serious story, and I'd love to get into this on the Richie Allen Show, and I'm going to try and get some comment on it. This is terrifying. And when I say terrifying, I mean it. I don't do sensationalism, or at least I try to avoid it as best as I can in producing my programmes. Now, The Guardian, rapidly rising levels of TFA forever chemical alarm experts. Rapidly rising levels of TFA. Excuse me. Let me start again. Rapidly rising levels of TFA, a class of forever chemical, thought to damage fertility and child development, are being found in drinking water, blood, and rain, causing alarm among experts. Now, I've practiced pronouncing these chemical names several times, so let me have a go. TFA, or trifluoroacetic acid. Trifluoroacetic acid is a type of polyfluoroalkyl. Right, trifluoroacetic acid is TFA. And that is a type of polyfluoroalkyl substance, which is a group of human-made chemicals used widely in consumer products that do not break down for thousands of years. So TFA is a forever chemical. It's a trifluoroacetic acid, right? A type of polyfluoroalkyl substance, basically. These are man-made chemicals. They're used widely in manufacturing. They don't break down for thousands of years. And according to The Guardian, many of the substances have been linked to negative effects on human health. On human health, even. So studies from across the world are reporting sharp rises in TFA. A major source is F gases, which were brought in to replace ozone-depleting CFCs in refrigeration, air conditioning, aerosol sprays, and heat pumps. Pesticides, dyes, and pharmaceuticals can also be sources of TFA. Everywhere you look, it's increasing. There's no study where the concentration of TFA has not increased, and that's according to David Behringer, an environmental consultant who has studied TFA in the rain, in rainfall, and he's done this for the German government. If you're drinking water, you're drinking a lot of TFA, wherever you are in the world. China had a 17-fold increase of TFA in surface waters in a decade. The US had a 6-fold increase in 23 years. TFA in rainwater in Germany has been found to have increased 5-fold in 2 decades. Now, The Guardian goes on to quote Hans Peter Arp. He's from the Norwegian Geotechnical Institute and the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. I'm worried, he says, about this because we've never seen in recent history a chemical that is accumulating in so many media at such a high rate. It's accumulating in our tap water, the food we're eating, plants, trees, the sea, and all in the past few decades. He went on to say, we've all been experiencing rising TFA concentrations in our blood since the Montreal Protocol, which is where CFCs were banned. Future generations will have increasing concentrations in their blood until some kind of global action is taken. Accumulation in the environment is essentially irreversible, and I'm afraid the impact on humans and the environment won't be recognised by scientists until it is too late. Last month, the German chemical regulator informed the European Chemicals Agency that it wanted TFA classified as reprotoxic, meaning that it will be declared that TFA can harm human reproductive function, fertility and fetal development. Denmark and Germany have set limits for TFA in drinking water, but the UK has not. England's water companies have been asked to assess their drinking water sources for 47 types of PFAs, but TFA is not on the list. That is terrifying. I mean, that really is no exaggeration, is it? To say that this is terrifying, that these, this forever chemical, this trifluoroacetic acid, a polyfluoroalkyl substance, is everywhere. It can damage fertility, child development. It can attack the growth of the fetus in the womb. Many other negative effects on human health. Doesn't break down for thousands of years. You have scientists in America, in Germany and in Scandinavia saying something needs to be done about this at the speed of light. And some scientists saying that we won't really see the impact on humans and the environment until it is too late. We need to explore this further in the Richie Allen Show. I'm wondering if distilling water, if treating your own water source, your water supply, your tap water, is a way of mitigating against this, I wonder. I've got to look into that. I don't drink tap water, but I do bathe in it, or I shower in it, like everybody else. I can't avoid washing in it, but I don't drink it. I drink bottled water, but that's problematic as well. But that's a very, very important story in the Guardian newspaper today. The TFAs are widely used in consumer products, in many consumer products. They don't break down for millennia. And these chemicals are linked to very, very serious and negative effects on human health. That's the Guardian today. It's the Papers Podcast with me, Richie Allen. I was going to do a funny one in the mirror about Generation Z, but I don't have time. I think I'll leave it and move on. I was going to say Generation Z. We're going to talk about Generation Z. There's a funny story in the mirror about two Miss England contestants who had to be rescued by mountain rescue after they became lost climbing in the Pennines. They've named these women in the mirror as Chloe McEwen and Lisa Ellis. They were in the final of Miss England. They attempted to complete the Three Peaks hike in the Pennines and eventually got lost, strayed 6 miles from their route. Night fell, they panicked and they contacted mountain rescue. But I'd be accused of misogyny, but it's not misogyny. It's a Generation Z story. Not able to use a map, not able to use a compass. Anyway, look, we'll leave it there. The Times. MP right to say only women have a cervix, says Starmer. And this is about Rosie Duffield. I talked about this briefly on the Richie Allen Show yesterday. So Rosie Duffield, the Labour MP, was right to say only women have a cervix, according to Keir Starmer, 3 years after he criticised her for saying this. He did criticise her at the time, did Starmer. When Duffield said, yeah, only women have a cervix, come on. He told Good Morning Britain yesterday, this is in the Times, that he got on very well with Duffield, who last year compared being in the Labour Party to an abusive relationship. She was shouted down in the Commons over her views on trans issues. Back in December, that's only a few months ago, of course, Duffield said Starmer hadn't spoken to her since 2021. He said she's a much respected member of the Parliamentary Labour Party, Starmer said yesterday. But back in September 2021, he said that Duffield's comments were something that shouldn't be said, and he said they're not right. Now he says she was right, but he refused to apologise to her. When he was questioned by Susanna Reid on Good Morning Britain on ITV yesterday, he said in response to, will you apologise to her? Well, I don't want this to go back into this toxic place where everybody is divided. What a scumbag Keir Starmer is. He's odious, isn't he? Slimy. Look at him. Listen to his delivery. He's awful. Makes him no different than most politicians, of course. Donald Trump has given an interview to Time magazine. And The Times newspaper has picked up on it. In the interview, Trump said Netanyahu should have stopped Hamas terror attacks. Benjamin Netanyahu is responsible for failing to stop the Hamas terrorist raid on October 7th, Donald Trump has suggested, saying that thousands and thousands of people knew about the attacks before they happened. He's not one to exaggerate, is he, Donald Trump? Thousands and thousands. No, stop, Donald. Stop, you clown. The Israeli government knew because the Egyptian government told them. The Israeli government knew because the IDF spotters, a specialist group of people working for the Israeli Defence Forces, who are charged with spying, long range and short range, on the activities across the illegal fence line that separates Gaza from Israel. Spotters had told their commanders that an attack was imminent, that an attack was likely within the next couple of days or the next week. Those spotters, who are women in the main, were told they would be fired and court-martialed if they continued to say what it was they were saying. So it was well known. It's also well known that Benjamin Netanyahu has long had a policy to support and to prop up Hamas with money and with weapons, because he believed that the presence of Hamas, once Hamas was there and active, it made it much, much more difficult, nay, impossible, for any two-state solution to be discussed or even implemented. So Netanyahu has always been, you know, a great supporter of Hamas, money and weapons, because of his belief that Hamas made a two-state solution all the more difficult to realise. So, of course, the Israelis knew. They knew exactly what was going to happen, and it's very, very likely, you can't prove it 100%, I mean, but it's very likely that they turned a blind eye to it and then used it as the pretext for what has happened in the 6 months since, which has been the brutal slaughter, murder and genocide of the Palestinian people. So Trump is right, but what does it mean, Trump saying that Netanyahu has let down the Israeli people, that thousands of people knew about the attacks before they happened? I don't know what it means, but it's in Time magazine, and The Times of London is reporting on it today. Like the occasional story about Science Me, here's one in the Express newspaper. Scientists claim women are no more likely than men to feel the cold. I'm not sure I believe this, because every woman I've ever known has spent much of their time, not most, much of their time complaining about the cold and putting the heating on, even when it is very warm already. Most of the women I've ever known, including my missus, always freezing, always putting the heating on, even in June, even in July. Well, a common complaint is that offices and public spaces with heating and air con are often set up with men in mind, leaving women shivering because they are more susceptible to the cold. Well, scientists, researchers from the National Institutes of Health in Maryland in the United States say, no, this is nonsense that women are more susceptible to the cold. Sex makes no difference whatsoever in terms of how we perceive temperature. So what they did was they took 16 women and 12 men and they exposed them to temperatures ranging between 17 degrees Celsius and 31 degrees Celsius for 4 hours, and recorded how comfortable the men and women were in those conditions, measuring their physiological response to the change in temperature. And they reported that no sex difference was detected in shivering or reported thermal comfort. There you are, the issue is settled. Sex makes no difference. Women are not more likely to be cold, and men do not have a higher tolerance to the cold than women. Published in the Journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, the report determines that women, in fact, actually deal with cold better, finding that women's body emergency heat generation mechanism activates at a lower temperature than men. I bet you're delighted I reported on this today. You might be. You might be a woman who's fed up of your partner telling you that you're not susceptible, or that you're more susceptible to the cold, or that you don't need the heating on because it isn't cold. No difference, according to this scientific study. We'll move swiftly on from that. And we'll finish today with a story in The Telegraph. It's an opinion piece from John Redwood. Is John Redwood still to this day a serving MP? I think he is. I'm pretty sure I see his hard to miss head in when watching proceedings at the House of Commons. Yeah, he's the Conservative MP for Wokingham. Yes, he's had the gig since June 1987. I had to do a quick check there. So John Redwood is an old Tory. I think at one stage or at one time he ran for the leadership of the party. I'm sure he did. I think he lost out to Michael Howard. Yes, I'm sure he did. He's written an opinion piece in The Telegraph. Here's the headline. Britain is about to surrender its sovereignty to the World Health Organization. So he talks in the article about the long and very expensive inquiry into how the various governments of the UK handled COVID. So he talks about the COVID inquiry. He says there are many lessons to answer, many lessons to be learned. He says the work of the inquiry will trigger more parliamentary and public debate in the future. He says the COVID inquiry should mean we enter any future health alarm better prepared and better informed. So we have an inquiry, hopefully, he says, will be better prepared in the future to deal with any health emergency. Meanwhile, he writes in The Telegraph, the World Health Organization shaped much of the work on COVID-19. It published data and advice on how to handle matters and seemingly sought to be a world government for the pandemic. Despite this, the WHO, the World Health Organization, is not holding an open public inquiry into what it got right and what it got wrong. There will be no public scrutiny and debate over how quickly the WHO responded to the initial outbreak, how long it took to offer good advice to member countries, whether its role in vaccines and medicines was helpful, why its statistics seemingly lacked a common basis to make fair comparisons between countries, or even whether its thoughts on the duration and severity of lockdowns did get it right, given the damage done to economies and healthcare systems. So he's having a good old whinge there about how there's no scrutiny whatsoever about WHO interventions during the pandemic. Interventions on vaccines and medicines and mask wearing and lockdowns and all of that. No inquiry on the WHO. No inquiry that seemingly the WHO has no interest in looking at itself and its own conduct during the COVID scam. He goes on to write, it is alarming then that the WHO is now seeking to lock us into a new treaty which would empower it to set a policy on stockpiles and access to medicines, vaccines and health equipment, including obliging Britain to hand over up to 20% of pandemic-related health products. If this right is granted, writes Redwood, it could prove the thin edge of the wedge. It's not hard to see how the WHO might try to take powers over a wider range of issues relating to the response to any new health problems it identifies as being in its area of influence. Instead of getting on with organising our own reply to a pandemic and offering generous assistance to others as we did in 2020, the UK would be puzzling over legal advice, worrying about what we were allowed to do for ourselves and what we had to share or accept from the WHO. He concludes, British government and opposition parties should have learned by now that our voters do not want their powers of self-government removed by signing up to international treaties. He says the public expects their elected ministers to make decisions that affect us all and keep us safe in an accountable parliament. That's Redwood writing about the WHO pandemic treaty in The Telegraph today. And that, dearest listener, is about it for today's edition of The Papers. As usual, thanks so much for listening to it. I appreciate your time. Now, the Richie Allen Radio Show for Wednesday, May 1st, will be live at 4 o'clock UK time today. I sincerely hope you will join me there. Every Richie Allen show is archived on podomatic.com, as are the papers, podcasts. You'll find them on iTunes, on Spotify as well, and wherever you get your podcasts. From the BBG, for the moment, it's bye for now. Sláinte tomall.